More time now that the blue light is on. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining our committee this afternoon. This is our Transportation Committee opening this fine March 9th day. Our first public hearing will be on House Bill 2841, and I will open that hearing officially now. And Patrick, if you would like to touch on what this bill actually does.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2841 requires the use of headlights when the windshield wipers on the vehicle are activated or in foggy conditions. It designates the offense as a Class D traffic violation punishable by a maximum fine of $250. We have no amendment on this measure. It has no impact, and we have yet to receive a fiscal impact statement, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I would like to first call Representative Evans. Yes. Thank you for being here, Representative. We're also, I believe, Senator. Your timing could not be more impeccable, ma'am.
Thank you.
Please join us. And I would invite you to testify in any order that you choose. We're delighted to have you both here.
Representative, you go first.
Thank you, Senator.
Good afternoon, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'll try to keep it relatively brief. For the record, my name is Paul Evans. I reside at 744 Main Street East, Monmouth, Oregon, representing House District 20. House Bill 2841, I believe, really is a small bill with potentially a big impact. It was drafted at the request of Mrs. Patricia Shilders, my aunt, who is actually sitting here and who's going to be testifying later today. Bottom line is, there are four reasons I think this bill is helpful. The first is, even though most cars, especially all the new cars, include smart technologies that sense hazardous conditions, we still have some older cars that, because of economic concerns, are still on the road a little bit longer than we wish they would be, but nonetheless, they're out there, and it's still a concern. Second thing is, we have many Americans living longer than any time in history, which means folks that have those old cars may be driving those old cars for a lot longer. We want to make sure that that is there. Third is that many young drivers and younger drivers have little devices that they're playing with while they're driving. And my belief is that the more safety things we can do, the better, because if people are already distracted, seeing a light in the distance of an oncoming car in a bad environment may actually be helpful. And the fourth is that even though this bill is probably not going to be changing history as we know it, just like the seatbelt law, I think that it creates good habits and ultimately will send an important signal to folks, especially learning how to drive, that keeping lights on and keeping those notices can actually be helpful. So, in bottom line, I don't think it's going to cost a whole lot. I think it's a good bill, and I would try to answer any questions or dance artfully to questions I don't know the answers to, if necessary.
Thank you.
I will defer to the Senator.
Senator, welcome.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from District 17, covering Northwest Portland and Beaverton. I actually had a constituent approach me about this 2 years ago and was feeling a little overwhelmed at the start of my first long session, so wasn't ready to take it on. So when Representative Evans asked me to join him, I was really delighted on this. I don't know about you, but I happen to live in an area where it gets foggy really easily. I live way up at 1,200 feet elevation, and either it's really foggy where I am and clear when you get down lower, or it's crystal clear up where I am, and then as soon as I get down to about 500 feet, I can barely see. In fact, even at 1,000 feet, I can barely see. And the fog is really bad. This bill doesn't specifically address that, although I would hope that people would consider it. But the other thing that happens is, even with smart technology, such as if you put your car lights on auto, a lot of times, even when it's pouring rain, there's enough light that it doesn't trigger the sensor, so it doesn't turn your lights on. And the rain itself reduces visibility significantly, so those headlights provide added visibility, not just for the driver of the car itself, but for drivers about oncoming cars. I live personally in an area where I have to make a turn out of my road, a very busy road, West Burnside Street, which some of you may know in the Portland area, which is really, really busy all the time, especially at rush hour, and it's really tough to see people even 150 feet away a lot of the time. So really, this is a safety bill, pure and simple. The fact that most cars, pretty much almost all cars now, lights turn off automatically after a short period of time, after you take the key out of the ignition, means that the issue of being concerned about battery life doesn't really matter so much anymore. You're not going to come out to a dead car if you forget to turn your lights off. And that's really true for almost all the cars that are on the road today. Pure and simple, this is a safety bill. Law enforcement thinks it's a good idea. They don't consider it an undue burden. And I think it's just the next evolution in helping drivers be a little bit safer all around. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Does the questions for this panel?
Am I good?
Thank you very much.
Thank
appreciate,
you, Madam Chair.
Appreciate
Thank
you being you. Here today. We have two other people signed up to testify on this bill, Bob Russell and Patricia, is it Chilton?
Childers.
I'm sorry, I couldn't read the handwriting very well. Please come join us. Okay. And Ms. Childers, would you like to go first?
Certainly.
Great, thank you very much.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman McEwen and the House Transportation and Economic Development Committee. My name is Pat Childers, Patricia Childers, and I also live in Beaverton, Oregon. I'm here to ask you today to support 2841. The driving has become more dangerous with the technologies that distract people, which, again, I'll refer to games that, you know, go on. They're not supposed to, but they do. Phones eating everything. The bill would keep our roads more safe, more secure. It would remind the drivers that don't have as many automatic things as a lot of us do on the cars. And again, I will state that when it's on automatic, that doesn't mean it's going to come on if your lights are to a certain point. You still have to make sure your lights are on. Many other states have this policy, which I was not aware. I thought Oregon always had this law. I don't know where I came with that, but I did until I drove back and forth, and I do drive back and forth often from Beaverton to Salem. And I found out not too long before I talked to Representative Evans that Oregon doesn't have this law. I think it's a safety that we do need. It's a very simple policy. And I think Oregon should make it a requirement as the other states.
Great.
Thank you for your opportunity.
Thank you for being here today. Mr. Russell?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell, the Oregon Trucking Associations. We are not opposed to this bill, but maybe we can make a couple of suggestions that could make it a little bit better. One of the things that we like to see in these kinds of bills is that there's some sort of standards. And this one doesn't really have any standards. It says when your lights are on, or your windshield wipers are on, you have to have your lights on. And then it also talks about at any time there is fog. And fog is sort of in the eye of the beholder. I'm usually pretty foggy myself, but other people may not think so. So that's sort of an issue. And instead of having the windshield wipers on, isn't the issue visibility? And that maybe we ought to be talking about having our lights on when visibility is restricted instead of just when the windshield wipers are on. And the reason I say that is that there are existing standards and administrative rule that deal with heavy trucks. And basically what it says is that if visibility is less than 500 feet due to snow, rain, mist, dust, smoke, or fog, then you have to have your headlights on, which seems to make a lot of sense to me. The other thing that I would suggest is you might think about being real clear what lights. Because, for example, you have Audis that have the nice little LED lights that look like eyebrows that are on all the time. And then when they turn their headlights on, those go off. So you might be real clear on which lights need to be on. I think the idea, again, is visibility. You want the driver of the car to be able to see, and you want other people to be able to see that car. So if you stick with those, then maybe we could make this a better bill. These have been around for a long time, and obviously they have not passed because this is back again today. And there were two others almost exactly like this in Senate Transportation earlier this afternoon.
Mr. Russell, have you had an opportunity to talk to the sponsors of this bill about your concerns?
I have not. I'm neutral. I was just making some suggestions. There's also a statute that requires ODOT to do a safety campaign to encourage people to turn their lights on when there's fog or rain, and that's ORS 811-526. So if we make it a requirement, maybe we don't need the campaign, and I don't know.
So what I'm hearing you say is we have three bills addressing this same issue?
Correct.
That are all moving in different places?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
I see the potential for some sort of a gathering of the minds to address all three of these. So we will take that under advisement.
That was my intent.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for this panel? All right, I think we'll be reaching out, see how the other two bills are moving, and if there's somewhere we can address those issues. But I might suggest you speak to the sponsors.
I'll be happy to.
All right. Mr. Alders, thank you so much for being here today, and we appreciate your concern and appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this Senate bill, or I'm sorry, this House bill that did not sign up? I've got the sheet up here, so if anybody else would like to speak, now's the time. All right. On that note, I will close the hearing.
Do we want to maybe just Representative Reardon's on his way down? Do you want to stand at ease for just a second?
Certainly. It's come to my attention that Representative...
good timing.
Yeah.
There he is. Representative Reardon, your timing, again, is impeccable. I will open a hearing on House Bill 2621. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2621 authorizes the City of Portland to operate photo radar on high-crash urban corridors. The measure has a sunset date built in of January 1st, 2024. We have in our possession a -2 amendment, which I believe the city will speak to. It just changes a couple terms in the bill and makes a couple other very small changes, but I'm all with that direction. So we have not submitted that to legislative fiscal or legislative revenue at this point.
Thank you. And we will turn it over to Representative Reardon. Thank you for being here.
Well, good afternoon, Chair McCune and esteemed panel colleagues. I am Jeff Reardon, State Representative, District 48, and I'm delighted to be here. I come to you here today because, to be blunt, I'm really tired of seeing people in my district killed. And did you know that your chance of being struck and killed as a pedestrian is 2.3 times higher if you live in a high-poverty area of Multnomah County?
Wow.
Those streets with the highest concentration of crashes in Portland are designated as high-crash corridors by the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And your chances, these are streets that are, their accident rate is actually 25% higher than the normal for streets that have a similar speed limit and so forth. I have several in my district, including 122nd Avenue, 82nd Avenue, Division is close by, Foster, Powell, and I could read you some of the stats here, but if you take a look at the, I believe it's 10 different high crash corridors over the last 10 years, there have been 96 deaths and 573 injuries over that 10-year period. And a lot of those in my district. It's hard to understand sometimes, but this area that I live in is an area that was has been built up over the last 20 years. It was annexed by the city of Portland, and so some of our streets and we're lacking streets and sidewalks. Another thing, kind of a characteristic that's interesting, is we have school-age kids that are crossing busy four-lane streets on a regular basis. We have old folks that are crossing these busy streets as well. And so it's kind of a special area. And then, of course, we have speeders, aggressive drivers that are major contributing factors as well. All of this just, you know, boils down to a very dangerous situation. We'll have the best example I can give you is Outer Southeast Powell. We did some safety improvements a year ago, so it's a little bit better. But basically, you have a what is a state highway running through the district, And along that state highway are moms pushing baby buggies, kids crossing on their way to school, old folks going shopping, and younger folks that don't always pay attention so well. So it's a really, really hazardous area. And so all I want to do is introduce this bill that gives our law enforcement folks who are just another tool to help control speeding. Let me go over the bill just a little bit. It talks about unmanned photo radar, and that seems to just raise the hackles of a lot of people, and I don't quite get that. We're not trying to surprise anybody. So if we have the unmanned photo radar, there will be whatever the photos are taken, they will be reviewed by a police officer. There will be a traffic laws photo enforced that will give the current rate of speed. So it's not one of just little sign, you know, kind of hidden off to the side. This is a lighted sign with your speed on it, and that would have to be 100 to 400 yards ahead of where the photo radar would be. And it is limited. This is limited strictly to the urban high crash corridors. We started out with the idea of putting in school zones and high crash corridors, kind of pared it down a little bit to the current bill that you have before you. The results of this would be reported once a biennium on the effectiveness and how well it's accepted. And the program sunsets in 2024. Can take a look at it then. It is something that's extremely important to the city of Portland. They asked me, and they've been working with me on this bill, to try to make it as effective and yet not really surprise anybody by it. So any questions? I'd be happy to answer them, or I think there may be some experts back here that have some additional knowledge.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Benz.
Madam Chair, and this bill has a familiar look to it. I think we've heard it before. Mm-hmm. A number of years ago.
We heard it last time.
But I can't remember. There was something to do with a machine that that's used for this purpose. It seems to me it's rented, and it moves around. I have this vague recollection of that. Can you? In fact, here's what I remember: that they have these machines. A company rents them out, and then I forgot how that works. Can you explain how that works?
I know your concern, and I don't remember exactly the details. There may be an expert back here, but some of the machines are rented in a sort of a pay-for-performance thing where the machine, the company that owns it, would be paid on how many tickets are given out. And my understanding on this, the city of Portland would actually own the equipment and not be incented to fine-tune it for maximum results or maximum revenue.
Representative.
Thank you. I'm sure that I think... Again, the issue was, I think the machines cost, when they've been last were discussed, between $250,000 and $300,000 per machine, and then it became how frequently would they have to be used in order to make the appropriate return to pay the city back for setting them up. That is what I recall. Do you know offhand?
I do not, Representative. Oops, sorry, I forgot the chair, Representative Bentz. I do not have that. Particular information. I can tell you that the sensitivity of the machines is way broader than, I don't even really want to announce what it would be, but it's about 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, 10 to 11. So it's not like they're really tweaking it down to a few miles an hour error.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. If I recall correctly, when we heard it last time, indeed it was usually set at 10 miles over whatever the speed limit was. And there were a series of other protections for the drivers that were put in place so the thing didn't turn into a tax-raising device as opposed to a law enforcement method. It would be worthwhile, and perhaps some of the people that follow you will testify to these issues, so because I simply don't remember all of them, but there's a bunch.
And I believe Representative Hack had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any other urban areas across our state that are doing this now, or would this be the first?
Chair McKeown, Representative Hack, to my knowledge, and again, we'll check with the experts and double check when they come up, there are none in Oregon. There are other states that do this.
Thank you.
Representative Reardon, I might draw attention to the background information on the staff measure summary. And it lists 11 cities in Oregon that are statutorily permitted to use photo radar devices. I'm not sure about fixed photo radar systems. I don't know if the definition follows over, but there are, it looks like Albany, Beaverton, Bend, Eugene, Fairview, Gladstone, Medford, Milwaukee, Oregon City, Portland, and Tigard. But
Chair, could we
the legal issues, I'm not quite sure about.
Local expert come up and
perfect. Excellent. We're so glad you're here, representing the city of Portland.
Madam Chair, members of the committee,
thank
for
you.
The record, Elizabeth Edwards, on behalf of the city of Portland, and just wanted to thank Representative Rubin for his leadership on this, and thank the committee for the opportunity to talk about the safety tool. I think there's a distinction to be made here between fixed photo radar, meaning unmanned photo radar that's set in one location, mm-hmm. and what we're calling van photo radar. Right now, in statute, the city of Portland and I believe 10 or 11 other cities can use photo radar enforcement, but it has to have a police officer present, which is why you typically have a van, and it can only be in one location for 4 hours at a time. The program that we're proposing would be fixed in one location, and if you look at the Dash 2 amendment, we would be able to move the camera after 6 months. It really is in one location, very transparent, well signed, which is different from the current program that we have.
Any other questions for this panel?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Borsick.
In terms of Portland Police Traffic Division, how many traffic officers do we have on the street right now? Would you say it's a large number?
Madam Chair, Representative Gorsuch, I wouldn't say that we have a wealth of officers in our traffic division. We have some very talented officers.
Right. Thank you.
Is this primarily a speed control issue? Are we trying to control speed, or are there other factors here that we're trying to impact with this technology?
Chair McGoon, I look at it as an educational tool. I really do. It's to make people aware that, you know, you're driving too fast through an area that is densely populated, poor sidewalks, and please slow down. It's as simple as that. We're not trying to get rich off of this. We're just trying to really help people understand they need to be responsible, and we're giving them lots of clues. You know, with the warning that the photo radar is in effect. So.
Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
Well, this isn't photo radar, but photo red light. We have one in the city of Fairview, and it's at 207th and Halsey, which is the kind of glide path to the freeway, and sometimes people think they're on the freeway, I think. And what we've found after a number of years is that major crashes at that intersection have dwindled down to very, very, very small numbers. And again, it's a situation where they don't sight. In fact, they sight about 50% of the time. But people know it's there, and they have correspondingly slowed down. So I think ODOT did a study about this, too, in terms of radar in work zones on the freeway, and that it had an impact similar to that.
But you'd have to ask ODOT. Amy's going, don't do it.
Representative McLean.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wondered if you could describe a little bit more the signage. If this is going to stay in a place for like 6 months, there's going to be signs so folks know it's there, and that we're trying to change behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's really change behavior so that you have safer corridors. So could you tell us a little bit about the sign, because they have to be able to see the sign if we're going to educate?
Absolutely. Chair McEwen, Representative McLean, if you look at the language of the bill, it lays out exactly what the signage would need to look at. In Section 4, Section 3B, may not be used unless the sign is posted announcing traffic laws photo enforced. The sign must be posted on streets in which the fixed photo radar unit is being operated must be between 100 and 400 yards before the location of the unit, must be at least 2 feet above the ground. That actually comes to us from when we would have them on vans, so up high enough to see, and then provide drivers with information about their current rate of speed. And we consider this a very important part of the bill because it gives drivers both the information and the opportunity to abide by the law and change their behavior.
Right. Thank you.
I'm glad that you added that last little part because that I come through Lafayette, and it goes from 45 to 25 just like that. And what helps me every time is I just slow right down till it says 25, and then I'm good, right? And so I think it's important because I see this from the representative's point of view as a way to make his corridors safer. And the only way you do that is by changing behavior, not giving tickets, I think. And so it's something where I think it's good.
All right, thank you.
We do have two other panels that are going to speak to this issue. I think we're going to get into some significant detail with our next panel. Representative Burton, thank you so much for bringing this to us today. Did you have any other comments to make before we move on?
Well, I really appreciate your support and everybody's consideration of this. Cassette is extremely important to my district and the people of Portland, so I hope you'll give it your fullest consideration.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time. You. Ms. Edwards, you may as well stay put. And we'd be happy to add to this panel Leah Treat and Gabriel Graff, I believe all representing the city of Portland. Is that correct? Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Real quick, I will introduce Leah Treat, who is our director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and Gabriel Graff, who is our operations and safety manager, and they'll be able to go into a little bit more detail and background. And I think you've heard the rest of my intro already, so I'll turn it over to Director Treat.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair McEwen and members of the committee, thank you so much for allowing me to speak before you today. Again, my name is Leah Treat. I'm the director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I took over this job roughly 18 months ago, and when I began, I announced to my staff that we would be adopting a policy called Vision Zero. And Vision Zero is a program which is embedded in the philosophy that every death on our roadway is avoidable and that no death on our roadway can be acceptable. In 2014, 28 Portlanders died in traffic crashes. Over half of those deaths were pedestrians. And in 2013, which is the year for which we have the most recent completely logged data, 36 people were killed on our roadways and 180 were seriously injured. This tragic loss of life is all the more disturbing because traffic fatalities can be prevented. So the City of Portland is committed to using every tool possible in its toolkit to reduce crashes and save lives. Our goal is zero traffic fatalities in 10 years. It's quite aggressive, and we need expansive toolkits to get there. We need to use education, we need to use engineering, we need to use encouragement, but we also need to use enforcement. Speeding in fatal crashes is a contributing factor second only to DUI. So I am asking your support for House Bill 2621 because the unmanned photo radar is an important tool that will help change driver behavior, reduce speeding, and reduce fatalities and serious injuries. Prior to my coming to Oregon to serve as the director, I also served as the deputy director for the Departments of Transportation in the City of Chicago and in the City of Washington, D.C. Both of those organizations implemented speed camera systems. And in D.C., the first I'll talk about, the nation's capital experienced a tremendous drop in traffic fatalities. In 2002, the nation's capital had 70 traffic fatalities. This is a really striking number to me when you consider that the population of the District of Columbia is roughly equal to that of Portland. In 10 years' time, the number of traffic fatalities in 2012 was 19 in the District of Columbia. In Chicago, we implemented a speed enforcement program, and we experienced a 76% reduction in traffic exceeding the speed threshold in areas covered by the cameras after just 1 year. So my experience in two other urban areas has demonstrated to me that speed cameras are an essential and necessary tool to change driver behavior and to make our roads safer. They reduce speeding, they decrease crashes, they save lives. I also think that we should talk a little bit today about the cost of traffic fatalities. These are costs that are borne by our economy and the cost borne by our most vulnerable populations. The cost of traffic crashes and the resulting property damage, human injury, and death they bring is estimated to cost the state of Oregon $422 million annually. The National Safety Council pegs the number of traffic fatalities and injuries to be $150 million annually to the city of Portland alone. Currently, unmanned speed cameras are used in over 100 jurisdictions across the U.S., so this is not new. House Bill 2621 is crafted to provide the authority for automated enforcements on the roadways where speeding is resulting in a high number of collisions, an abnormally high number of collisions, as you heard Representative Reardon speak to. A National Highway Traffic Safety Administration report produced shows that photo radar system reduces crashes in the ranges of 20 to 25%. But as I testified earlier, in my personal experience, the outcomes are greater. So in closing, I'd like to reiterate that speed cameras are an essential tool in our toolkit to result in reducing crashes, increasing safety, and protecting our vulnerable populations. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you for being here. I think we'll complete the panel and then open for questions if everyone's all right. Mr. Graff.
Thank you, Chair McKeown, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gabriel Graff, and I am the Operations and Safety Manager at the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And I'll be walking through a short PowerPoint to show you where these serious crashes are occurring and why we think unmanned speed cameras will help prevent them. One of the most significant things we've learned in working on transportation safety over the last decade is the relationship between our arterial roads and crashes. The majority of serious crashes in the Portland area occur on arterial roadways. Portland is crisscrossed by these high-volume, multi-lane arterials. In our region, you are over four times more likely to get in a serious crash on one of these roadways than on I-5, I-205, or I-84. The Portland Bureau of Transportation designates the worst of these arterial roadways high crash corridors. Oh, there we go. And you can see them highlighted in yellow on this slide. These 10 roads, representing just 3% of our roadway network, account for 51% of our pedestrian fatalities. As Leah noted, speeding is a top contributing factor to fatal crashes across our region. Speeding is especially a problem on Portland's 10 high crash corridors. And while as a state we have made substantial progress on other key transportation safety issues, notably seatbelt use, we have much more work to do on speed. These streets are mixed use and often the commercial hearts of the communities they run through. They are where the majority of pedestrians are struck and killed. So why does reducing speeding hold such significant safety promise for these roads? As this slide illustrates, speeding extends reaction time and stopping distance. Traveling at excessive speeds has been consistently linked to higher crash rates. As speeds increase, so too do crashes. The faster a driver is going, the longer it takes them to recognize a dangerous situation, and once they have hit the brakes, to bring their vehicle to a stop. Variation in speeds is also an important factor. Roadways where some drivers follow the speed limit and some vastly exceed it have higher crash rates as well. At its simplest, the issue is physics. Once a vehicle exceeds 30 miles per hour, a pedestrian struck by a car is more likely to die than survive. A person struck in a vehicle traveling 40 miles per hour has just a 15% chance of survival. Nationally, pedestrians make up 14% of traffic fatalities. But as this map shows, of the 156 people who died in traffic crashes in Portland over the past 5 years, pedestrians made up fully a third of those killed, more than double the national average. Speeding and Portland's dense multimodal streets don't mix. So what do these roadways look like? Here you see Southwest Barber at Miles, one of our high crash corridors. If you are driving into downtown Portland on Barber, this is where the roadway curves to head northward, and the posted speed limit drops from 45 miles per hour to 35. Sadly, many drivers do not abide by the posted speed. On average, one person a year dies on Southwest Barber Boulevard. In 2013, there were three separate fatal crashes at this location alone, making this the most deadly section of roadway in Portland that year. And here is Southeast Division, another high crash corridor. This is Division and 142nd. And here is Division and 148th. And here is Division and 156th. In 2013, a pedestrian was killed at each of these locations. Outer Southeast Division was the most dangerous place to walk in Portland in 2013. We saw more pedestrian fatalities on this stretch of road than anywhere else in the city. Here is 122nd, another high crash corridor, one very close to Representative Reardon's office. This photo shows 122nd and Stark, and the site of another traffic fatality in 2013. As the representative noted, if you live in a high-poverty census tract like this one here, you are more than twice as likely to be killed while walking. Portlanders must cross these multi-lane roadways on foot to get to the bus, library, or grocery store. Children must cross them to get to school. Here you see Vestal Elementary, which directly fronts 82nd Avenue, another of our high-crash corridors. You'll note that students walking to school on this sidewalk don't even have the benefit of parked cars to buffer them from the five-lane road. High crash corridors are shared streets, and we have a shared responsibility to operate safely on them. As Leah mentioned, this bill is carefully targeted and limited in scope to those roadways where serious and fatal crashes are occurring the most frequently. Unmanned speed cameras can enforce speed limits on these roads 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, freeing up police resources and improving safety across our city. They can enforce speeds on roads where existing tools make enforcement difficult. Roads with no shoulders or no parking in which to park a mobile speed van or safely pull over a speeding driver. The bill contains many provisions to make the system clear and transparent, and it builds upon this body's history of carefully piloting automated enforcement measures to improve safety. We want everyone to know on which corridor speeds are photo enforced so they cease to speed on them. Our goal is behavior change. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll just clarify one thing, that the City of Portland's intent to enter into a contract with a vendor to provide this service for us, and it's not currently our intent to own the cameras, but to have a flat fee contract structure so that the vendor will not be incentivized to have to issue tickets that make the most sense, which is in keeping with national best practices. Yeah. Happy to answer any questions.
Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you all very much. So if this bill were to pass, how many cameras would we expect on each of these high crash corridors? Are we going to put them every 500 yards, 600 yards? What does life look like in the city of Portland for drivers after this bill passes, if it were to pass?
Chair McKeon, Representative Davis. So one of the provisions in the Dash 2 Amendment allows the city to, should be in the Dash 2 Amendment, to move the camera after 180 days in a single location. The purpose behind adding that provision is so that we wouldn't have to have a proliferation of cameras all over our crash corridors. It's so that we could be very strategic about placing them in certain locations and then moving them once driver behavior had changed to another location. We have been in conversations with the Portland Police Bureau about the actual number of cameras, and I would defer to Gabe on.
Yeah, national best practice is to roll out these cameras, these programs, carefully and strategically. So you want to make very clear to the public the nexus between safety and the cameras. And so our plan would be to do a careful rollout, and I don't think we wouldn't anticipate seeing any more than 10 or 20 cameras.
Yeah. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the issue is obviously one of the safety we actually get from the device, not the raising of the money. So I noticed that as I'm driving over here, they have one of those speed limit signs as they come through Bend, and I see it just shows you your speed. You're supposed to be going 45, and everybody's going too fast, and they all slow down. It's pretty amazing. But there's no ticket. There's just the sign. Given that, my own observation of everybody slowing down, and it's been there now about 3 years, it's amazing how well it works. Why wouldn't you just do that?
Chair McKeown, Representative Bentz, we have several of those speed reader boards deployed across our city and several on high crash corridors. And unfortunately, we still see speeding. You know, I think for many drivers, the information of the speed they're going and the limit is enough. Unfortunately, it's for some drivers, it's not enough. one of our roadways has a slew of speed reader boards, and we still had 3 fatalities last year there. So,
hello, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Yes, so you must have a study then from the cities who do enjoy this device and the availability of it here in Oregon that shows that what you're saying works.
Chair McEwen, Representative Benz. Yes, the National Highway Transportation Safety Organization shows that these camera systems reduce crashes to the range of 20 to 25% on average. And there are specific studies for cameras where they are targeted, like this program would be, on the roadways where the crash problems are the most significant, that show even greater results. So,
thank you for that. I'm sure there's a question.
Yes.
The question, of course, I asked was, we have this in Oregon already, and I believe that these, I don't know how many cities have this, 7, 9, something, that have
it's
these.
11.
Yeah. And so, and I believe they have arrangements where the police officer has to be present. There's a bunch of interesting things that try to protect us from becoming a police state or a machine-based police state, which is what the other side of the argument is. I supported this bill last time, 2 years ago. And I got all beat up for it for the various reasons that have to do with the next couple of steps, which is demand that we see your cell phone, we track you, we watch you all the time. It's that type of an argument that's on the other side of the safety argument. So in anticipation of getting to hear those assertions again, it would be great for you to produce the study and to make sure it fits what you're trying to do so we can show for sure that the infringement on rights is offset by the studies that you show save lives. But we need to see it, because I guarantee you this will be an issue, since I've been through it before.
Chair McEwen, Representative Benz, we'd be happy to provide that to the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Chair, and I apologize if you already covered this when I was out, but I just have a question regarding the relationship of the speed, because if I look at the figures here, it talks about unfortunately, the deaths, bicycles, pedestrians, motor vehicles, and motorcycle. So I'm assuming in each one of those categories, so if it's pedestrians, the pedestrians were hit by a car. Is that correct? And it means they were hit by a car. So I'm just trying to understand, because we have a similar situation in Springfield on Main Street, which is very, but speed isn't the only, or isn't, it's hard to tell the role that speed has on it. When I looked at some of the pictures of those corridors there, there certainly were stoplights and crosswalks. So I'm just trying to understand this, how you've determined the relationship, or that speed is the primary driver versus some other types of conditions in the roadways that would lead to these deaths.
Chair McEwen, Representative Lively. So when we look at the top contributing causes to fatal and serious injury crashes, speeding is the number 2 after DUI. And if you look at these roadways, I think the relationship that speed has to pedestrian safety sort of goes back to this chart. You just don't want to be a pedestrian and a car in the same place at the same time when the vehicle in that equation is traveling at 45 miles an hour or faster. You know, at 50 miles an hour, if you strike a person, they're almost 100% likely to die. So it's that they are pedestrian environments, that kids need to cross them to get to school, that people are walking along them to get to the store or to the bus, and the plus the speed.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have support of your local police departments, and how do they feel about this?
Chair McEwen, Representative Hack, yes, we do have the support of the Portland Police Bureau. We have had many conversations about this bill and its implementation. We have a very strong partnership with them, especially the Traffic Safety Division. We meet once a month and go over all of our traffic fatalities, go through the data of crashes, and they are supportive of this bill.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any questions? This is hearkening back to a much younger time in my life when I watched a musical called The Man of La Mancha. And there's a song in The Man of La Mancha, and one of the phrases in the song is, whether the stone hits the pitcher or the pitcher hits the stone, it's going to be bad for the pitcher.
And this chart reminds me of that phrase, because no matter what speed you're going, the vulnerable member is the human who is going in contact with a car. And this is a very telling chart that you have up there. I mean, I hadn't realized that that amount of speed had that much difference in the impact. So thank you for bringing that to us. Anything else for this panel? Great. Thank you so much for being here. We have two other people who've signed up to testify, Christy Finney Dunn and Mary Lee Turner. Welcome to our committee this afternoon.
Thank you.
Please, in any order that you like.
You want to go first?
All right.
I'm willing to if you want me to.
Honorable Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to testify today on this very important traffic safety legislation. I'm very nervous.
You're going to do just fine.
My name is Christy Finney Dunn. On August 12th of 2011, my son Dustin was killed on Southeast Division Street in Portland. He was attending college and had just started living the life of his dreams when he was struck from behind on his bicycle. The driver was drunk and is now in prison for hit and run and criminally negligent homicide. And while they did not, during the investigation, pursue how fast this driver was going, what I can say is that witnesses stated that the driver was speeding past them, and my son was hit so hard that he flew 175 feet. And he died of blunt force head trauma, not from a crushed skull, but from being hit so hard that his head was knocked off his spine. This driver also hit another bicyclist at the same time, and fortunately that young man was able to survive with fairly minor physical injuries. So since that day, I've become a traffic safety advocate and done a lot of research. Also since that day, 9 more people have died in traffic crashes on Southeast Division. That's 9 more families like mine who have been torn apart by tragedy, and many of these crashes were from speeding drivers. As a mom, I can't tell you how much pain I feel every day because my son Dustin is not here any longer. And I know that every time there's a traffic fatality or a serious injury, that there is a huge web of pain, not just from family members, but friends and coworkers, neighbors. I also know that you, as our representatives, have the power to pass a law that will save lives. This is kind of impromptu, but I wanted to share something that happened with me this past month and a half as my car broke down. And so I've had to rely on family members and friends and coworkers to get me back and forth to work. And they know what I do. They know that I speak at victim impact panels and high-risk driver panels every single month. I travel as far as Newport to do this. They still, with me in the car, could not slow down their speed. They could not stop at stop signs or stop lights. They could not stay within their lanes, and they didn't even know what they were doing. It was really a wake-up call to me. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
So please vote yes so that fewer families suffer the same or a similar fate to mine.
We're very sorry for your loss, ma'am. Thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Turner.
Good evening. I'm Mary Lee Turner. I live at 334 Southeast 50th Avenue in Portland. And I am a congenitally legally blind. I have been a pedestrian for 67 years. Well, probably not the first couple of years. I am retired from being a rehabilitation teacher and mobility instructor with the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and before that I did that in Florida. And I am here asked to testify because I am so profoundly and personally related to what high speed can do. I have been hit as a pedestrian. It was just somebody who backed up and wasn't paying attention and threw me into the street and created some lifelong damage that I'll live with. But I vowed at that time that I would step forward whenever possible to be a resource for information in regard to what it's like for not only folks that are congenitally blind, as myself and my twin sister are, but the caseload that I worked with was with adults who were 55 years and better, average age of 88, who were experiencing vision loss. And believe me, these are almost all of these folks have driven all of their lives and now are unable to do so. As our population lives longer and as our communities grow in size, the anonymity seems to be what rules. It used to be if a young kid was out driving radically, everybody would go tell his papa, and his papa would take him behind the barn or do whatever they do back there, and he wouldn't do it again, or at least when somebody else could catch him. But now, as people have referred to people, you know, they roll their windows up, they're on the cell phone, they're fighting with the dog, they're creating their grocery list, they're frustrated about what they forgot to buy, they're texting, and I'm out there standing on a corner waiting to cross the street. I am a really safe traveler. I am very cautious, I'm very careful, and every time I cross the street, it takes a tremendous amount of courage. Mm-hmm. Because not only do I have to familiarize myself with what the pedestrian, you know, traffic pattern is at any intersection, which takes a lot of work to figure out who's coming from where, and you know, throw quiet cars into it, and you know, Lord knows where they are. And so it's the fact that as you so graphically saw on the screen, the faster people are going, the slimmer the chances are that pedestrians are going to make it out alive. And I cross all of those streets that were referred to because I'm busy serving in the community on all kinds of boards and organizations, and I'm out during the day, at night, and this bill would really, I believe, help to slow people down, make them increase their awareness, and give those of us who are pedestrians and bicyclists and people in motor vehicles a greater chance of surviving. Great. There's so much out there that I want to do. I don't want to cut short because somebody was not only not paying attention, but speeding as well. So thank you very much, and if I can be a resource in any way, it would be my pleasure.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Turner?
Don't be raising your hand.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to be here today and to be advocates for something that obviously is very important. This is a serious issue, and we will be taking it under consideration. So, great. Thank you so much for your time.
If you need us back, don't hesitate.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 2621? Then I will close the hearing, and we will move along to our third bill, House Bill 3035. We will open hearing, and we will welcome Representative Hack. Yes, sir, please. Welcome back, Representative, to your own committee. Please.
I almost want to say good afternoon, colleagues.
Nice to have you back. In any order you choose, please.
Madam Chair McEwen, members of the committee, mm-hmm. I'm Representative Jody Hack. I represent House District 19 for the record. And I get the privilege and honor of presenting House Bill 3035 to you today. And first, I'd like to give credit where credit is due, and that is to the amazing parents, teachers, and principals of Cloverdale High School, or not Cloverdale High School, Cloverdale School, and Cascade School District, their superintendent, facilities folks, and all of them that brought this actually to Commissioner Cameron's attention, who then brought it to me. And I just get the privilege of
submitting the paperwork and being a part of such a great process. So I want to make sure that the credit goes to the folks who really care about their kids, and I do as well, but they brought this to our attention. So what House Bill 3035 does, it addresses a much-needed safety issue for children. It allows for the flashing lights to be used in a school zone between the hours of 7 a.m. and 5 p.m., so that's when school is in session, if the school has a parking lot located across the street from the school and that street has a speed limit or designated speed posted of 45 miles per hour or greater. There'll be several folks that will come up and testify today in regards to why this is so important to them, but it seriously is a safety issue for children that needs to be addressed. And I think it's really important for you to hear their stories and why this has been brought to the attention of myself and of Commissioner Cameron, and he's probably got a few words to say too, but it really is a safety issue for children and something that should be addressed. It has a may in the bill. It's not a shall, so it's an opportunity for them to be able to change the times that they flash their lights for safety concerns.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It is good to be back in the building on this side of the table. The last time I was actually testifying in front of you, we were trying to get the DMV, I think, open after ours. And I want you to know that, for the record, Marion County Commissioner Kevin Cameron. I want you to know that if you ever do get a ticket in Marion County, you can go to our court. It's open on Tuesday nights. So we do know how to be open at nights so that you can be taken care of. Now for the seriousness of House Bill 3035. A little bit of history. I got a call from Tom Level at Cascade School District that we have at Cloverdale Elementary School. They replaced the 7-to-5 signs a couple of years ago at the request of, I think, parents for flashing lights. And the school is it's a real small country school. I'd love to give you a tour of it. It's, you know, one of those very small community schools. And on one side, it's a 55-mile-an-hour highway. And on one side of the highway is the school. In fact, you wouldn't be able to build this school. It's so close to the highway today. And on the other side of the highway is a parking lot. The statute existing, we have two options in the state of Oregon. Post 7-to-5, so you're going 20 miles an hour, 10 hours a day, when you don't necessarily need to, when the students aren't there. Or the other option is flashing lights, and the statute is very clear that you can only set those lights to flash upon a scheduled arrival and departure. What the school called me and said, why can't we? We just want Public Works to flash these lights from, I think it was 7:30 till about 2:45 or 3 o'clock, so that there was slow traffic in the area because grandparents and parents come and pick up their kids. There's things going on all day long, and it would just slow this traffic down. So that's when the representative and I got together. And if you look at the bill, it's very narrow. It is at 45, speeds of 45 or greater. And it is, I believe it says, a parking lot across the street. So it's not going to have every Public Works department in the state going crazy. I've run this by the sheriff, and the sheriff looked at the bill as it is, and they have no problem enforcing it as it's written. And I've also run it by our Public Works, and with the only exception of trying to figure out how to get power to certain solar programs, that'll be their challenge. And in this case, the school and the Public Works would work together to get the power out there at this particular situation. So I think you'll hear more stories from parents and students that are here to talk about it. And I also know that you just heard a lot about safety and speeds. And these are our most vulnerable people in the state of Oregon, our little ones. These are kindergartens through fifth grade out there at that school. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your service. I really appreciate what you do. And it's great to see all my old friends and a couple of new ones, right. Too. So that's thank right. you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And I'll answer any questions.
Appreciate you being here. Questions?
One other thing I had, too. We did meet with ODOT, and they're not in opposition of the bill. They did have a couple of concerns in that, you know, they're not 100% sure that this will slow folks down, although we're optimistic that it will. And they had a concern that the possibility of traffic congestion and possibly some rear-ending if people are driving fast. But it's a very rural area. Probably at one point was a dirt road, then a gravel road, and is what it is now. So they're not in opposition.
Any sense of how many schools this will impact that have a school on one side of a highway and a parking lot on another? Have you heard from any other school districts?
Representative Williamson signed on to the bill as well, and she said she actually has a few in her district. And so I know that there's some up in that area as well. But, you know, across the state, I don't know.
Great. Thank you so much. Nice to have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
We have, I believe, two more panels to speak. Next, I would like to call up Mr. Lovell. And Darren, I'm not reading the last name.
Drill.
Yep. From Cascade School District. And also let's call Christy Wilkins. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Darren Drill. I'm the superintendent at Cascade School District, which includes Cloverdale Elementary School. If you have been to Willamette Valley Vineyard, or if you've taken kids to the Enchanted Forest, you have entered my school district. Exactly. And right on the other side of that hill lives the quintessential small, tiny elementary school with 170 kids. K through 5 was built almost 100 years ago. And our goal today is to really impress upon the committee that this change in the law is really important for our kids. Cascade School District is a rural school district just outside here at Southeast Marion County. Unfortunately, in the last 36 months, we've experienced two fatalities around traffic for two of our students, both at the high school, which sits literally out in the middle of a bunch of fields. But the reality for us is, as we went through those tragedies, we started having conversations about trying to figure out a way to be proactive. One of the biggest concerns that came to us was this, and I believe you've got the copy of the picture there from the aerial view, our elementary school at Cloverdale. You know, the signs, as Commissioner Cameron said, and the flashing lights are great when they're on. Problem is, when they go off, people tend to forget that. They come over the hill and pass that elementary school day in and day out. There are grandmas and grandpas that cross the road. We've got moms that have a three-year-old in hand and got the seven-year-old coming back from the dentist appointment, and there's not enough parking spaces, and they come across that road. Anything from 18-rail semis to farm trucks to people just missed the turn and somehow ended up out on the road out there, missing I-5 or missed Enchanted Forest. We got people going up and down that road. We are very concerned about the safety of those kids. One wrong turn would be in trouble. The other piece that was mentioned is they wouldn't build a school there now because of how close the road is. Unfortunately, also, when we go through fire safety drills, depending on where the kids are, the quickest way out, according to our fire marshal, is to come out to the front side of that road. And so we all just kind of stand around and are very concerned. So as a leader of the district, I'm here, but I'm going to turn it over to the two people that deal with it more often and cede my time to them. So thank you for hearing what we have to say.
Mm-hmm. Here you go.
Yeah.
Madam Chair and Representatives, thank you for having us here today. I'm Tom Lovell. I'm the operations manager for Cascade School District. I've been with the district for 39 years and have lived in the community and school district for 55.
Tom's not going to say it, but he's a graduate of Cloverdale Elementary School.
My granddaughter's the fourth generation. You talk about the school being old. I was getting some history of that school from my father-in-law yesterday. He's 90. And I asked him if there was a school zone there when he went to school. He said no, but there was a hitching post. And so the school is a 1910, and, you know, whoever thought that we'd have the amount of traffic that we have nowadays. And so as we come here today and we just look at some of the safety things, I think with my background, I can just give you some factual things. We're all concerned about the safety of our kids. In our district alone, we have four crosses of kids that have been killed in our area, and people just drive fast out in the community, you know, and we do know when the lights flash, people slow down. I think you'll see a letter from Mr. Remy. I don't know if Christy's going to read it, our fire chief, our local fire chief, and he's the one that, you know, talked to me, and he said, boy, you know, Tom, when those lights flash, cars slow down. And as soon as they go off, it just seems that, you know, they're just back to wide open. We're a bedroom community of Salem now. And so when we're out there, the south end of our little community there, our school, that's a blind spot. You come up over a hill, and cars are traveling 55, 60 miles an hour, and there's our school. And coming that other direction, if you were coming from the north to the south, it's not as bad, but that is really bad at that point. And we have a parking lot across the street. The road, I don't know if you folks are able to see this overhead. I gave it to this gentleman here. Mm-hmm. You know, our buildings range from 26 feet from the road to 103. So we have one building 26 feet. We have the next building where our kids exit to go on their fire drills that's 90 feet from the road. And then when they exit to go on fire drills to the bottom parking lot, they're within 10 feet of the road, of the white line. And that's something that the fire department has mandated we do. That is the exit strategy they've told us we have to do. And so it's close there. Then our next spot there, the 1910 building, is 38 feet from the road. And then at the bottom parking lot, we're 103 to where the kids get off the bus. So our concern is just to get the cars to slow down. And we've looked at other options. We've tried to see if there's other things. But in our opinion, if we can just get the lights to flash, it just makes people aware that there's something there and they have to slow down. I'm open for any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Christy Wilkins, and I am the principal of Cloverdale Elementary School. I have the privilege of serving as principal there. And, first I want to thank Representative Hack and County Commissioner Cameron for being our partners in this process and advocates for safety of children in our school. All of the points that Tom and Darren mentioned, I agree with. The safety issues, including the proximity of the school to the road, the adjacent parking lot right across from our school that children and grandparents and staff sometimes have to cross, and then the ridge to the south of the building that really impairs the vision as cars come racing down in the morning, especially, I think, probably commuters on their way to work. But as principal, the most important thing I do really is to keep children safe. If children don't feel safe, if parents don't feel their children are safe, then learning isn't going to happen, because that's the most important thing to a parent. And this is my fourth year serving as principal there, and this has been a concern of mine since day one. Often I have gone out there in the morning, early in the morning, and I know Tom has too, and been just frightened and frankly appalled at the rate of speed that drivers are speeding past our little school. When we had the lights installed, often I'd be out there, and I know Tom and Darren, you both have, the lights work. It's really interesting to stand out there in a way, an area where they don't see, because if they see people, they'll slow down. They know who I am by now in the community. So when the lights are flashing, the cars slow down, it works. There's a correlation between slowing down and those lights. And when the lights go off, immediately people start speeding. I mean, just it's really predictable, and they at very high rates of speed. Again, I think there's a lot of commuters. They're on the way to Salem, the metro area, wherever. So I know that those lights work, and it seems like a relatively simple solution. I thought before this process started it's much more complex than I realized, but they work. I care very deeply about this school and the community, and as we all do, and the safety of the children that I serve. And I hope that you will seriously consider this bill for the safety of our children. We have some parents, and I noticed, probably you noticed, are some of our adorable children that have come here as well to share their stories. And thank you so much for hearing me this afternoon.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkins. Any questions for this panel? Thank you for your good work. We appreciate you being here this afternoon. It's an important issue.
Staying in the warm room this afternoon.
Yeah, you bet. It is warm. We're trying to cool the room down. We haven't been successful yet. Yeah.
Came on for a minute.
Good. We have one other panel, I believe, of some parents who would like to testify. I'd like to call to the panel Tammy Walling, Karen, is it Withers, and Stacy Moore. Did I get close?
Yep.
All right. Please come on and join us. We appreciate you being here today.
Good afternoon. I have the privilege of being both a faculty member. I'm a fourth grade teacher, 21 years in the Cascade School District. I'm also a parent of a first grader. And I would like to speak as well as to the safety of expanding the hours.
And would you mind stating your name for the
record? I'm sorry, Tammy Walling.
Thank you.
I have an older daughter who works in the after-school program, and the lights are not on at that time of day at 4 o'clock, and there are many times when I'm called upon for other meeting responsibilities, and she brings home my younger daughter, and I would be devastated. That would be two of my three children impacted in the event of an accident with the speeders. Even today, I had to park across the street because parking is an issue at our school. And there were many, many speeders during the day. It's very scary. You're carrying lots of belongings. You may be carting a child, like they said. And I'm just concerned. I've also seen people passing in front of the school during the school day when the lights are not on. And I see that quite regularly because I teach in one of our portable buildings. And I have to go to the office a lot of the times to run errands. Mm-hmm. And so I see that happening weekly. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your service as a fourth grade teacher.
Of course. My name is Karen Withers, and I am a mother of a first grader and a fifth grader who are here as well. And we've been attending Cloverdale since 2009. And we chose to move to the area because we wanted to specifically be in the Cloverdale school in the Cascade School District. It's a wonderful school. It's a small rural area, just like they said. And it's got a great staff, great administration, and mostly great parents, and it's really got a good sense of community. So we just love the whole entirety of the school there. Parking has always been an issue. Like they've said, we've got the lower lot, the lot across the street, and then even parking on this side of the road has become an issue for a lot of our events. We have, the carnival, barbecues, grandparents' desserts, assemblies. People have to park on this side of the road, so we always try to get there a little early so you can get a spot somewhere, even if it's not the safest spot there. And then in 2011, Marion Elementary School was closed, and many of those students came to Cloverdale, so we gained a higher number of students and parents as well. So there's a lot more traffic going through that area. So it, again, has been a concern prior to that and even more so since that time. And as you were saying, Parish Gap Road is a commuting road, so there are people just zipping up and down that road all day long. There aren't businesses in our area, so everyone that lives around that whole region is usually commuting some direction. So I have three examples of safety issues that I have seen or been involved in. And the first, kind of along the same lines that Mrs. Walling has said, is the drop-off and pickup. When you have to park across the street, you're carrying your kids' backpacks, school projects and whatnot, and they're excited to get across the street to school, and you're kind of holding them back. And looking to the south, the road is kind of elevated, so you can't really see cars coming across. So you kind of hope, pray, and then, wait for that one parent who recognizes you, who stops and, lets you and your kids cross the street. So that's been an issue that's happened very, very frequently, and thankfully we haven't had any near misses, but, we hope that certainly doesn't happen. And the other one, like I mentioned, the Grandparents' Dessert is an event that we host every year, and it's a very successful event, and so you have a lot of older parents or grandparents that are coming to attend, and the parking lots are packed. They literally are parked up and down the side of the road, past some of the other houses, the fields, and whatnot. And my parents have come to that to spend time with the kids, and they have to park, up along the side of the road. Unfortunately, my father was on crutches when he came, and he, get out on the side of the road, and he's walking, and a car just comes zipping right by during the middle of the day, and it was a really scary near miss for him as well. And like they talked about with the fire drills, 2 years ago I was there when my son was in third grade during a fire drill, and I kind of walked out, just followed along the students behind them, and they all went in front of the school next to the road, and they're all excited to get out of school for a couple minutes and see their friends, and the whole time it was kind of like herding cats, trying to keep them off the road because cars are zipping by, and the students aren't really thinking of that. We want to keep them safe, and the teachers want to keep them safe, and they are just kind of oblivious to that, and those cars, they don't care. They're just zipping right by, and it's a really big concern, so we really appreciate your time, and hope you can support this safety effort for the benefit of our children.
Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Stacy Moore, and we were in the Marion group that came over to Cloverdale, so we've just been there in our fourth year now, but that was one of my first main concerns, and Marion was on this nice, quiet little road where, the speed was pretty much always 20, 25 anyway. It's a dead end, nothing going on. And that was one of the first things we noticed was, this is a really busy road going by here, and so we got to be careful crossing it. And at that point, it was the 7 to 5, which made good sense for all the coming and going that goes on. But people, I think, just miss the signs. They just don't see them. They're in the middle of the country. They're going on their way here, there. And it's such a short school zone that you're pretty much through it before you realize that, oh, I was supposed to slow down there, I think. So I have noticed personally just how the flashing lights have helped to slow the cars down. Just because it catches your attention and you're more aware, especially we've mentioned the south side a bunch. You know, you come up that hill, well, you catch those lights before you reach the rise, and so then people are already slowing down. I've also noticed that not only do they slow down, they're a lot more ready to stop and let people cross. You know, we're used to being in the country. Neighbors might be checking their mailbox, and you do just zip by them. You know, you scoot over, give them room, but people don't slow down typically for people on the side of the road, and I think that kind of translates through to, oh, it's just someone on the side of the road, no big deal. But not realizing that, oh, it's school, I need to slow down. They're trying to cross the road right here. So the flashing lights really have helped, in my opinion, what I've observed, to have people slow down. We just need it longer. And our school just keeps growing. So with the larger enrollment, we get more cars. And, yeah, like has been stated, they'll be on the road sometimes even and just want to get our kids to school safely. So, anyway, I thank you so much for your help on this and listening to our concerns, and thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. You. Questions for this panel? Representative Hack, did you have anything else you wanted to add? Okay. We really appreciate you being here today. We know these are important issues. Do you want to come back up?
Oh, yes, there's no crosswalk. I'll say that. There's no crosswalk.
Okay. We all have had, will shortly have, yeah, or have had, you know, opportunities to work in a school setting and understand that these are very important issues, not only to parents and to the faculty and the administration, but to the children. And I'll tell you, we don't have opportunities often to have young people in our hearing room, and it has been delightful to have these beautifully attended children here with us today. So thank you so much for sharing them with us, which really puts a point on why this is incredibly important. Thank you so much for being here today. We'll excuse this panel, and then we'll ask if there's anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on this House Bill 3035 before we close our hearing.
Children are welcome to testify, too.
Absolutely. We would be more than happy to have young people testify. We would be honored to have you at our dais. You're welcome to escort her. That would be just fine. Thank you, ladies, for being here. Please take a seat. And if you don't mind, state your name for the record.
Okay, my name is Grace Hinkle. I'm a student at Cloverdale, and it's kind of scary when you're crossing the road because cars are just going really fast down there. So, like when we go to school in the morning, sometimes, like when I have a project and my mom helps carry stuff in, we have to make sure and look both ways before we cross the street because there's cars and we don't know when they're coming and we have to go real fast across the street. Wow. So I just wanted to say that.
Well, I really appreciate you being here, Grace, and I really appreciate your parents for training you well. It sounds like you have a difficult situation and you're very well aware of it, which is a good thing. And I thank you so much for your time and coming here today. If you don't mind, I would like to give our colleagues here an opportunity to ask any questions, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Anyone have questions?
Oh, I have one.
Thank you, Representative McLean.
Do you think that it'll be safer with the lights up there? Are you going to be in support of this bill?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
And if you would also like to state your name for the record, then you'll be officially on the record of the Oregon Transportation Committee in the House of Representatives. You don't have to say anything, but if you'd like to state your name, you'd be welcome to.
My name is Matthew Hinkle.
Hi, Matthew. Thank you for being here today.
What grade are you in, Matthew?
First grade.
First grade. Nice. Hey, how's it going? You.
Good.
And you?
My name is Delaney Walling.
We're delighted to have you here, Delaney. Thank you so much. What grade are you in? First grade. So are you two in the same class? All right. Well, we're delighted that you came to talk to us today and tell us how important it is that flashing lights can help keep you safe at your elementary school. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it greatly. Anyone else? All right, then we will close the hearing on House Bill 3035. And Mr. Brennan, what do we have on target for Wednesday?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This Wednesday we have a slate of five public hearings ranging from student transit passes to a resolution about Build America, to log truck variance permits, and then we're also going to do work sessions on the two veterans bills that we heard in public hearing a week and a half ago.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. We're going to have a very busy day on Wednesday. On that note, we are going to have a very busy day on Wednesday. On that note, we are